Okay, then, let's get started. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming out here tonight. So glad to see you. So many faces I know. And, of course, everyone knows Michelle Meow. I'm John Zipper. I'm the Commonwealth Club's Vice President of Media and Editorial, and I have one of the coolest jobs in the world because once a week I get to co-host the Michelle Meow Show right here. In fact, usually right here in this room. Feel free, if you want, to get some more food and drink during the program, but we are going to have a really great discussion in a few moments with James LaDuca from Salesforce. But we're also tonight celebrating the end of our first full year of programming with Michelle Meow at the Commonwealth Club. We have done nearly 50 programs. They have been fun, fascinating, deep, important. We've met some wonderful people. And Michelle is such a committed, smart, hardworking person who knows everything and I think everybody involved in the LGBTQ community in the Bay Area and beyond. So she's a great partner, and we could not be more thrilled. Now, to introduce her, let me first introduce Dr. Eldon Shriok of Pacific Fertility Center. Doctor.
Hello, good evening. I'm so honored to be here tonight. This is a mission, if you will, that's so dear to my heart. When I started doing IVF in 1983, a lot of the things were sort of taboo of taking an egg from one person and putting it into the uterus of her partner. And the first thing I did when I got to a position of political power, I changed those rules back in the early 90s. And then I was fortunate enough to meet this lovely person, Michelle, and have been so happy to have a common mission and to support her as we've had many conferences together. And I think it's just wonderful to have her expertise as a communicator who's not afraid to find out where the puzzles that need to be found and solved are. And so I'm just so happy that I've worked with her now over 5 years, and it's just been wonderful. So thank you to you, Michelle. So happy that we'll continue this mission together, and thank you so much.
All right. So this is when I start breakdancing, I think. I've always wanted to, but I didn't get very far in middle school when it was cool. But, you know, it was this profession or becoming a rap artist. So the rap artist part didn't really work out. Anyway, welcome to the Michelle Meow Show. The Michelle Meow Show is your A through Z covering the LGBT, LMNOP, and everyone in between. You know, well, 10 years ago, actually over 10 years ago, I didn't see myself. I didn't see a lot of people who represented the LGBTQ community in traditional media and said, we should. Why don't we have more, you know, queer people talking about queer issues or queer people talking about our lives? And so that's kind of how the show started. And now it's evolved into this platform in which there's a part of it where we all come together and we have these open conversations. And it's an intersectional approach to having the dialogue around social justice. So to be LGBTQ means that that means you're also talking about women's rights. LGBTQ means you're also talking about homelessness. LGBTQ also means that you're talking about gender equality, gender identity, sexual orientation, racial equality, and the list goes on. We can't have these conversations without talking about each other in this way. And so I'm very grateful to the Commonwealth Club for this partnership, and it has evolved. John had mentioned that we've got over 50 programs throughout this year. That means over 500 community members came to the club to hear conversations. That means over 500,000 downloads as far as the World Wide Web who are listening to programs when we're talking about transgender rights, we're talking about housing rights, we're talking about racial inequality. Some folks said I can throw some names out who have been to the club. We were looking at this from January until now. We did Black History Month with Samson McCormick, who is the first LGBTQ comic to ever perform at a Smithsonian Museum. We had Katie Sowers, who is the first LGBTQ coach in the NFL and the second out. Oh, yeah, that's right. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's why John's my co-host. We've had Alicia Garza, co-founder of Black Lives Matter and now Black Futures Lab, who is working very hard in making sure that the African-American community is represented in the census. We've had a series on immigration in which some of the speakers are here with us tonight, like Ignatius Bao, who is a policy consultant who's been very, very instrumental in making sure that people understand that the administration is trying to make a change to the public rule regulation, which means as an immigrant green card holder, you know, you've become a public charge if you're I don't want to get into it. You should just listen to the podcast. But millions and millions and millions of people would be affected by this change in which they're trying to basically go after the most marginalized, anybody who is seeking social services and isn't of status. And then we also did a conversation with Artie Coley, who's with Asian Law Caucus, who was just here earlier, who had talked about how the API community is being affected by the immigration changes. And then we did a state of trans violence talk in which we talked about Black transgender women who are being murdered at an epidemic rate. And then when the administration wanted to erase transgender federal protections, we put a program together with the city of San Francisco and the Office of Transgender Initiatives. The list goes on, but what I'm trying to paint to you is that this is a space for a conversation about equality. This is a space for us to come together and make change. This is a space to exchange thoughts and ideas so that we can become better people and leave this world, this room, a better place for our future. So thank you very much for this ride. I want to thank a few more supporters and sponsors of the program. First and foremost, how is the food? I mean, this food hits the bottom of my heart and the belly of, like, you know, hunger for me. And the reason why is my wife, Orwan, who's at the very back, and her and a team of volunteers, Thai community organizers, such as Annie and Max and Darlena, who are right there behind her, who all catered this meal for us tonight. And it's San Francisco, so obviously, not just San Francisco, but of course, we're also mindful of our vegan and vegetarian friends, but I have to be honest, I was really thinking about someone very special to me, the executive director of San Francisco Pride is here. We served together, George Ridgely. And he may, in the future, if Orwan and I decide to have a baby, will be the father of our baby. So we had to feed him. There are vegan options. And my very special sister, who made the spring rolls, and she came all the way from Stockton to do it. So thank you. And thank you to IDK Events, who provided the very, very nice wine. I was told many times that these are very, 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 very nice wine. They're doing a bunch of wine walks around the city, so make sure you look out for that. So I also want to equally thank, and then I'll stop my really long speech. It's not like it's the Emmy or anything, but I have to thank a few other sponsors in the room tonight. Weatherford BMW, you might recognize Weatherford BMW as one of the leading sponsors of the Pride Parade, who provide and donate the convertible. So if you're a Grand Marshal in this room or have been, then you've sat in their convertible, but they've been longtime supporters of the Michelle Meow Show, actually since the very beginning, so I could cry now. Jen and Jacqueline are here, and Jacqueline is the new board president of San Francisco Pride. Yeah. And Ceremony Ford, who's here. Sharon, thank you so much, who shared so much with us and has done an incredible amount of work. And thank you to all the sponsors who are here. Okay, I'm going to stop because we have a very special guest and we have a great program to end the year. And it's all this conversation around equality. I cannot think of a much better guest than somebody who has given so much to community. He's done community organizing. And now he's doing corporate activism, and he's also, you know, involved heavily on the politics side. So when you put those three experiences together, what you're going to get is an incredible person who's dedicated to the community. So let's welcome James LaDuca from Salesforce to the program.
Welcome.
James.
Hi.
I want to look like you in a different life.
So wait, before we start.
Yeah.
Can we just a round of applause? This is a 1 year anniversary.
Yeah.
You had this idea and this vision a year ago, and this is what you've created. And I just want to acknowledge you and say thank you for your leadership.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
And we just matched, so.
All right. So James right now, he's the director of equality programs at Salesforce. But in his lifetime, he has also served as senior vice president for the San Francisco AIDS Foundation. He has led a multi-million dollar program with Gilead for HIV AIDS programs. And you have served, or you're currently, you know, serving for the LGBTQ committee for House Democratic Leader Nancy Pelosi, and also served for the
Speaker-elect.
Yes.
Yeah, Speaker-elect.
I hope. But let's not forget, also have served, you know, under the Obama administration or for President Obama in a committee. And so you've done a lot. But your most important role, which is the role you play today, is father.
Mm.
Yes. Yeah. So I want to start there. I want to, you know, tell us. Wow. Being a dad now, your daughter is a year old. So you've got two Charlies at home, Charlie, your husband, Charlie, the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how has Charlie, the baby impacted, you know, all this work that you've done as far as equality goes?
Oh, wow. How much time do we have?
Yeah.
So Charlie's a girl, baby girl. She's named after my husband who's here. And gosh, where do we start? Has opened up my worldview in so many different parts of my life. Emotionally, I cry at Volvo commercials now.
Not Subaru?
This is a true story. But also, I've always felt a deep sense of responsibility, but it is much deeper than ever before. And I think, you know, added to the responsibility that I feel as a member of the LGBTQ community to represent and be a mentor and a trailblazer for younger LGBTQ people that I felt like the HIV/AIDS crisis took from me, I feel a responsibility to my daughter and young people everywhere in a way that I don't think I fully appreciated until it happened. And it is both beautiful and at times overwhelming. So you wake up every day and sort of ask yourself, what difference can I make?
Yeah. I love that, you know, you answered that question as far as making sure that people knew Charlie is a girl.
Yeah.
And before, when we were chatting on the phone, I mean, you had mentioned something about even, you know, two gay men raising a female baby and your work in equality, there's a lot of things that Charlie teaches you in every day and how you can make a difference in this kind of work.
Yeah.
Talk about gender equality and kind of how your views have changed just by raising a baby girl.
I mean, I've always had a really deep commitment to gender equality because I fundamentally believe that gender equality is good for everyone. It's not just good for women. And the more we work together to make the world a more equal place, everyone benefits. But you know, being a father of a young girl and knowing that not only are we creating the world that she will inherit, but also, you know, right now the World Economic Forum estimates that it's going to be 2057 before women reach pay parity, and that is for white women. It's something ridiculous, like 2057. For women of color, Latinos. And that's, you know, we don't have that long. And so what can each of us do to make sure that we stand with women and for women and for equal pay and for, you know, full representation of women in business, in government, in civil society?
So we're at a time when a lot of those goals are under attack. How do you see ways? I mean, one of the big, and we've talked about this a number of times on the Michelle Miao show, one of the biggest developments over the past couple of years has been private companies that have sometimes been the main ones standing up and saying, no, these idiot bathroom laws are bad. You know, NFL changed this rule, that kind of thing. What are you able to do through Salesforce, not just internally, but of course, as a very visible company, at a time when these are not just controversial ideas that they might be in normal times among some folks, but they're like targeted ideas, frankly, right from the top of this country?
Yeah, I'm incredibly proud to work at Salesforce, where we believe businesses are, in fact, the greatest platform for change in the world. And that comes from our founder, but it's really embedded in the DNA in our company. So, you know, when our co-founders came together and envisioned this model for this company, they made something that's known as the 1-1-1 pledge, which is 1% of our profits, 1% of our people, and 1% of our equity, our products, into making a positive change in the world. And when we were just being founded and we didn't have any of those things, that wasn't a hard pledge to make. But now that we've scaled to one of the largest tech companies in the world, it has a transformational power. Okay. So it enables all of us to go out into the world. Each employee at Salesforce has a whole week of paid volunteer time off. And employees are encouraged to go out into the world and make a difference in causes that we care about. And we're really clear, you know, we've got four values at Salesforce. They are, trust, customer success, innovation, and equality. Mm-hmm. And when you think that a company as large and complex as Salesforce has four core values, and one of them is equality, you know, that gives you a true north for how you're going to develop your culture. And that is a really powerful thing because, you know, we can say confidently that elections don't change our values. You know, we stand for equality. It's not a matter of left or right. It's a matter of right or wrong. And those are things that really make a difference as you're trying to, you know, guide a path forward towards a more equal world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, really. I'm like, oh, okay, so every business should be just like that. But before we get to that point, I mean, you know, I mentioned it in my introduction. You have the experience of community organizing. You have the experience of what it's like to fight for our voices on, you know, the political side, which in our history wasn't always there. And then now you have the ability to really have the ear of one of the largest or maybe the largest global companies in the world to make this kind of change. Many of us are still in the silos of working with the different types of organizing, right? So many of us are still doing community organizing. Many of us are still just in the political world. Many of us are now venturing into the corporate world. What kind of advice could you give for us to be working in tandem or in unison together in order to move forward, especially during this very critical time where it feels like we're taking two steps back?
So you triggered two thoughts. So I want to address one, and then I'll answer your question. I think a lot of us spend a lot of time when we think about the change that we want to make in the world is, you know, when I'm finally in that position, when I finally get that raise, when I'm finally in that room, I'll have more power to affect change. And what that does is it does an incredible disservice to the power that every single one of us have right now to make a change in the world. And that starts in circles of influence that we all have on a daily basis. It doesn't matter if you work for a nonprofit or you know, a government agency or a business. One of the things that's universal and very culture setting is the fact that we all call meetings. I'm sure if you, show of hands, have you ever called a meeting in your workplace, right? That means you have power. Do you practice inclusive meetings? Do you make sure that when you pull a group of people together, all voices are represented, that there's gender balance, that if there's a note taker in the room, is that role rotated so someone's not always in the position of having to be the scribe? Are you making sure that everyone's voice is heard? And if you have a, you know, serial interrupter in the room, are you exerting your influence and power as someone who called that meeting to say, actually, I want to hear what she was saying? And let's be clear, it's almost always a she. I want her to be able to finish what she's saying, and then we'll get to you. And knowing that you have the power to do that, it changes the culture of whatever your work setting is. And that can be a powerful thing.
Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, how do you think other companies tend to be doing on equality, and both for themselves and as kind of public actors, if you will?
Well, one of the things that gives me great hope is there is just this growing body of evidence that shows that standing up for clear values and investing in equality is not just the right thing to do, it's the smart thing to do. So, you know, the study after study is showing that when you have diverse companies, that you have teams that are more collaborative, more efficient, they produce better products, and they make more money. And so then your commitment to equality becomes a competitive advantage. And you're seeing more and more, you know, Salesforce talks to all of our customers about this. And we have conversations, and we have customers who come to us who say, gosh, you know, how can we model and learn from Salesforce more of what you're doing to leverage equality, not only to make a difference, but also make a more efficient, more profitable, more successful company?
Does Salesforce require certain things of companies that work with it? I know we had someone on the show who said, you know, the first thing they do, or first thing they're in a position to turn around to some of these companies. It was a law firm, I think. And their question, very top of the line, became, how many women do you have on your board? You know, how many LGBT people are going to be in that boardroom when I meet with you, that kind of thing. Do you require anything, or do you see your role as teaching and being available to help them do things?
Well, you know, we see our customers as incredible partners. We have this concept of Ohana, which is the Hawaiian word for family. And we when we think about our stakeholders of the company, we don't just think about our employees or our customers. We think, you know, everyone's a part of the Ohana. So the people who live in the city where we have our headquarters, that's our Ohana. The families of our employees are our Ohana. Our customers are our partners. Our broader ecosystem of people who use our products. Those are all our partners. And so we work collaboratively to sort of model our view of how you blaze a new trail for equality for all. We have something that we stand really clearly against at Salesforce, which is something that we sort of jokingly refer to as a mantle. A mantle is an all-male panel. There are no women voices there. Mm-hmm. That is something that we won't subscribe to. So we know at Salesforce, if we're invited to speak someplace and we are one of an all-male room, we decline the invitation. And we encourage our customers to do the same. And when we invite our customers in and we host them, we make sure that there's gender balance, that there's racial balance, that there's a diverse group of people in the room, because that's the model and standard we want to set for companies. Mm-hmm.
Love this. I love it so much. I want to walk into a meeting and be like, I'm not a part of this mantle. So I'll be honest with you. You know, I've social media stalked you.
Oh.
And your Instagram.
Mm.
Yeah. I was like, wow. Heart, 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 heart. And I was like, oh, wait. That's a little too much stalking. But, you know, but what I love is your authenticity and your willingness to share, and you're just so honest about your life, like what you're doing, your family, your daughter. You know, how much of that authenticity is what you do, you know, 8 to 5? And if there was ever, you know, a moment in which you had to make sure that whoever at work you're working with, maybe not at Salesforce in San Francisco, but I imagine you talk to a lot of people, customers, and you know, especially around the world. But how much of that, like, you've got to ensure that they see your authenticity as well?
It's a great question. So two-part answer. One, a big regret in my life is that I spent far too much of my youth hiding who I was. And that is not uncommon for LGBTQ people. But also, guess what? It's not uncommon for underrepresented people. We as queer people just have the ability to hide it a little bit better. You know, you can't hide the color of your skin. But you can hide who you are, and I certainly did. And I think that's not uncommon for people, especially who are older and who came out. or who grew up in the 80s and 90s. And so I try to live my adult life encouraging people to never hide who they are. And especially never hide your differences, because your differences are your superpowers. Those are the things that make you uniquely you. That is the special sauce that you have to give to your employer, to your partner, to your communities. No one else can give that. And that is something that we should let shine instead of armoring up and hiding. With regard to our family on social media, it's been a really interesting journey. We like any parent, well, I can't say any parent, like most parents probably, before the daughter came along, we had a thoughtful conversation about how much of our family and how much of our daughter do we want to share on the internet? Because let's face it, it can be a really scary place. And so the natural inclination is to want to hide and protect. But again, I grew up in the 80s, and the images of LGBTQ people that I saw in the media in the 80s told me my life would be short and my fate would be different. And so I feel this great responsibility to, even in the small, modest way, show that we are a queer family going through normal family stuff with a one-year-old who, you know, we're not that different. And if that can play any role in helping be an example that someone in Thailand or India or South America can see and reach out to us and say, it gives me so much hope to see your family and to follow your family, then it's worth it. It's worth that trade-off. But also, you know, we regularly check in with each other, because being visible means you get trolled. And so there's this constant balance between, you know, being visible and being an example, and making sure that, you know, hate speech or threats of violence are reported and those users are banned, and that we're using just common sense practices to make sure that we're not exposing too much of our family.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. I mean, great father, great partner, amazing at work. I'm like, what are you not good at?
You know, it's, I'm going to be honest. I have all the same thoughts and same experience, same tapes that play in my head that all of us have. The tapes that say, like, what are you doing speaking at the Commonwealth Club? What have you done? Those tapes are not our friends. And if you are underrepresented or you come from a minority group, those tapes have been with you a really long time. So every day I have to practice not to listen to those tapes. Some days I'm better than others. And some days, you know, those tapes take over. But I challenge myself to, when I'm feeling like I'm going into that red zone, not to armor up and just to be fully vulnerable and present and see what happens. One last quick story. Our surrogate gave birth to our daughter in Rochester, Minnesota, which meant that 3 days after her born, Charlie and I found ourselves in the airport in Minneapolis, walking with a baby that was 3 days old. And we're walking along, and not surprisingly, we get a lot of looks, the three of us, because we're sort of an odd threesome in Minneapolis. And some of them are really positive, affirming looks, because babies are awesome, and they're wonderful, and then there are all those other looks. And then you start to play the tapes, and you think to yourself, you know, is it because we're not holding the carrier right? Is it because she's only 3 days old and has no business being in a public airport? Because that's a terrible idea. Or is it that were two men. And those tapes start to play. I start to get in my head, and then you suddenly become really aware of the court order that you have in your backpack that sort of legally declares the two of you as rightful parents, that you realize that no new parent has to carry around in a public place. And so Charlie, I think, runs to the bathroom. I go up to the counter with the baby, older Latino gentleman at the ticket agent, looks at me, looks at the baby, sees, you know, Charlie sort of going off, and then looks at me, looks at baby, and is like, "Is this your baby?" Like, yeah. And boy or girl? Girl. Her other parent? Well, he's right there. And I swear it's the longest pause that I have ever heard in my entire life. And I feel myself armoring up. I just like feel myself bracing for whatever is gonna come next. And I'm ready. And he says, "Congratulations, my daughter and her wife just had their first, and I'm a new grandparent." And I think if I had just like, "All right, bring it on, whatever you're going to say," that moment would have never happened. And I think in those moments of connection where we just allow ourselves to be fully seen, a lot of them don't work out that way. A lot of them work out the other way. But I'll take one of those for, you know, every nine that doesn't work out, because this moment of connection and normalizing that, like, we're just like everyone else.
John, do you have a last question before we open up to our audience for Q?
You've had involvement in politics. Have you ever wanted to run for office? Do you consider that somewhere in the future?
No. I think like our leadership at Salesforce, I really do think business is the greatest platform for change. I think of the scale of change that we're trying to accomplish at our company, not just for our company, but our sector, for the city, our investment in Prop C, you know, our work to really invest in communities and in people, and being a part of that at this company, I think is as impactful, if not, quite frankly, more impactful than a role that I could have.
You can always change your mind.
We've heard so many people say that, and then 2 years later, they're like, "Donate now $5 to my fund running for supervisor." All right, questions for James. We'll take them for a few minutes before we open up the dance floor. Back there. Allie.
I'm going to squeeze past you here.
Thank you. Allie Nelson, following on the interesting question here. So you're very successful at Salesforce, and we have a personal friend that works there and has talked at some of your luncheons and stuff for gender equality or whatever she talks about. Oh, if it's not politics, is it always Salesforce? I mean, you have a strong voice.
I would be lying if I said I could answer that question, because when I started my career, I would have never pictured myself here. You know, I just sort of show up, and whatever opportunity ends up materializing, you know, that's the direction I go. I sort of check with my gut, check with my values, and go in that direction. And that for me, and I'm just, you know, this is what's worked for my life, has served me super well, is just staying really present to whatever changes are happening. And, you know, who knows? I do love this company. I love this city. I actually would probably reverse that order. I love this city. Mm. I love this community. Mm. And I love this company.
That's awesome. Sima.
Thank you so much.
Thank
you so much. I really have always really liked Salesforce and Mark Benioff and all of the positions that you've taken when other companies would not. But it made me think when you were talking. I love that story you were talking about with the flight people at the airport, because a lot of people, like, what's sad is that a lot of people, like, in my generation or a few years older, who have had kids where the other parent, like one of the parents, would hide their relationship to the kid. And kids grew up pretty messed up trying to hide who the other person was. It's a godmother, it's an aunt, who the hell knows what it is. And I think that what you're doing is you're really setting an example and creating an environment for people to be okay with themselves. And my question, and here's my question, what do you think Salesforce has done? Because you know how Google, people always talk about Google, they've always had all these scandals around diversity. And what is Salesforce doing to keep on sustaining this growth and this discussion? Because you're doing something right.
You know, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to our culture. And our culture is defined by these four core values. And equality is one of them. And it is, in fact, our North Star. I think what makes Salesforce special and unique is our founders put as much intentionality and applied as much innovation to the design of the culture as they did to the design of the products. And I think it is incumbent, not just for tech, but for any leader today, especially looking at the workforce of the future and the fourth industrial revolution and increased connectivity of people and automation. If you're not putting the same level of innovation and thought into the design of your culture, then you know, what is that going to say for the future when your products begin to, you know, change really the landscape of how we all live? And so making sure that you're building not just products that are transformational, but companies that are transformational.
Grace. Yeah.
So I've actually worked with Salesforce quite a bit on equality stuff, and I've been a speaker, but I think you guys are doing great stuff. But I've actually looking at different jobs right now, and I've applied at Salesforce probably 30 times, and my resumes get auto-rejected. Part of that is because I'm not from privilege. I don't have education. I dropped out of school grade 9, but I'm vice president of a software company right now. This is my third company, and Salesforce, I don't even get interviews, and I'm about to be a director at Google. So I feel like education's a privilege, and underserved communities, it's hard to get education. So you can say you want more people of color, more people from like LGBT world, but if we don't have education, we can never actually get to that level.
I totally agree with you. I can't speak for your specific experience, although if you want to talk later and give me your card, by all means.
Oh, can I give you mine too?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know. The lights might go off. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. Go on.
But one of the things we are doing is we're very aware of the challenges with people who come from non-traditional backgrounds. And so we're working with organizations like Year Up and Genesis Works and all sorts of partnerships that look at people from non-traditional backgrounds with non-traditional educational journeys to make sure that they are given as much of an opportunity to come to Salesforce and help you know, us enrich our culture and build, because we fundamentally believe that it's, you know, those people have as much to teach us as you know, we do at Salesforce to put great products out into the world.
Maybe one more?
Yeah. Jacob?
Hey, James. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Jacob.
I liked what you said about businesses being the greatest catalyst for positive change in the world today. And I resonate with that because I used to work at the largest company in the world and was around a lot of people who believe that. And now I work at Levi's, which also has a long track record of making a positive impact. My question is, do you think that the U.S. or the world will start to look to businesses and corporate leaders for moral guidance in this complex world? And is there potentially a danger in that long term, because businesses at the end of the day will always operate to their own advantage, whereas government is supposed to work for the public advantage?
Yep. So my view of the world is I've seen progress happen at the most sustainable and accelerated pace when all stakeholders are at the table. So to think that business alone can change it, or that government alone can change it, or that civil society and activism alone can change it, is short-sighted. True, sustainable, enduring progress happens when all stakeholders are at the table for a dialogue. And what that means is you're going to have a diversity of viewpoints, a diversity of opinions and positions. But ultimately, if we're allowed to focus on the values that we share in common, our view of the world that we share in common, we can truly forge that enduring change in a way that drives equality forward. I think it can't sustain as a model to have any one player be the person who bears full responsibility, be it government, be it business, be it civil society. And if you look back in modern history in the U.S., but also globally, I think you've seen some of the greatest progress when you have industry collaborating with civil society, collaborating with government. Do I feel like that's what's happening right now? No. But I have hope that we will soon return there. And I think where we're at right now, quite frankly, is a direct result of the extraordinary progress that we've just made. And so when you think of the ebbs and flows of progress towards equality, whenever you, it's sort of like a pendulum, you know, whenever you see an extreme swing towards one side of progress, Obama administration, you know, it's there's a little bit of pushback before you can continue forward. You know, our last president was very clear and constantly repeating progress is never a straight line. Mm. And not only does it zigzags, but it often goes back before it goes forward.
Let's give James a round of applause. We're so lucky to have you, and you're a beautiful mind and a beautiful person in our community, among the very many beautiful people who are in our community in general. So thank
you
for being here.
We're so lucky to have you.
Oh,
and you.
Thank you.
Who I just met.
Thank you.
But you seem lovely.
Thank you.
You really do.
I'm thrilled that you and Charlie could be here, but you left the other Charlie home alone.
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
You'll learn. You'll learn not to.
She's not alone. Don't spread rumors.
That's what I do.
And none of us would want to be, like, it's definitely Bed Bath time.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want her here.
I know. Trust me, John, I did invite her, and that's how James knew that I'm not a parent.
You should bring her. It starts at 7 p.m.
I have sparkling apple cider. Thank you all for being here tonight and for supporting the Michelle Miao Show and, of course, to the Commonwealth Club. We have a great, great, great lineup for 2019, so I'm excited for it. Follow us at commonwealthclub.org. We've got a great partnership that's coming up. Ishmael, who's with Alaska Airlines back there, we're bringing in some big, big names next year. Yeah. Because, you know, the celebrity-type people, they don't take trains or something like that. They've got to get on an airplane. Yeah, but that's fine. So we're excited for it. Follow us at commonwealthclub.org. Thank you to our major partner, Pacific Fertility Center, for supporting the Michelle Miao Show. There's lots of wine, lots of food, and
we'll get Santa back out here to pour the wine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So enjoy it. There's some music going on. We'll do some dancing, do some networking, and we'll see you all in 2019.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Yes.